And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. And if everything worked out all right, we should have noted Islamic scholar, journalist, and community leader Zafar Bangash on the line with us. So, Zafar, do we have you on the line?
Yes, I can hear you clearly.
Ah, excellent, excellent. Well, Zafar, again, you are a favored guest on our program because of your in-depth knowledge on events in Afghanistan and Pakistan and other issues. And it's sort of a sad thing to have to call on you today because there's so much bad news we're receiving from the region. And I wanted to get your take on that. But it's just a bad bag in many cases. You look at the recent drone attacks that have been increasing in Pakistan. And, you know, this is something that's, I think, probably underreported in the media, but it's those predators or other robotic drones. They say that they're striking terrorist targets or whatever, but they've actually killed quite a number of civilians, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. The drone attacks that started in January of 2006, up to now, out of several hundred people, any sort of so-called terrorists or whatever targets have been less than 10 out of several hundred people, if not 1,000 or more people killed in these drone attacks. Invariably, they target people's homes where women and children are sleeping because these attacks occur at night, or in people's compounds, because that is how people live in that part of the world. This is the frontier tribal region of Pakistan. And literally hundreds of civilians have been killed in these drone attacks. And one other point that I think we ought to take cognizance of, and that is that while officials in Pakistan claim that these drone attacks are being carried out without their knowledge or permission, that is simply not true. Pakistani officials, especially in the government and the military, since the time of General Musharraf, have given tacit approval to these attacks. And these drone planes actually take off from Pakistani military bases to attack their own people. And so both the government as well as the military in Pakistan are also complicit in these American attacks against Pakistani civilians.
Well, I guess the obvious question here, at least for me, is, you know, why does the government approve this? I mean, are they under pressure? I know that Obama and the U.S. administration is saying Pakistan isn't doing enough. So, I mean, do they feel pressured to do this?
Well, absolutely. There are basically two points over here. The first is that obviously successive Pakistani governments have not had the backbone to stand up for the rights of their own people. Secondly, they are also totally alienated from the people in Pakistan. They are, the ruling elite in Pakistan have virtually nothing in common with the overwhelming majority of the people who live in extreme poverty, lacking all kinds of resources and so on. And so these ruling elites are definitely under pressure. They are cowards. They simply want to be in power. Secondly, the Americans, of course, pay them. So they are acting as mercenaries for the Americans in killing their own people. So number one is the fear factor. Even if the Americans didn't pay them, these elite would not have the gall to tell the Americans not to do this. But, of course, you know, if they can get a few dollars, then they think, what is the blood of a few hundred poor Pakistanis for, you know, millions of dollars? And so both factors are at work in this scenario.
Well, we can get back to the United States and Pakistan's government, but these drone strikes really make me think, because I've read the estimates of the death count. It's like 500 or 700. I mean, this is pretty significant because Pakistan wasn't supposed to be this much of a front on the so-called war on terror, and now we have civilian casualty or death counts in the high hundreds. What kind of tribal areas are these? Because I hear the word tribal areas, but I mean, whose tribes are these?
Well, the western province of Pakistan is made up of two kinds of areas. One is what is referred to as the settled districts. Now, the settled districts are those where the government law, government authority, and government writ is exercised. Then adjoining that, that means moving further towards the west, towards the Afghanistan border, this region is referred to as the tribal area, which means that there are a whole lot of tribes that reside in that area. And I want to add that it doesn't mean that tribes do not reside in the settled areas. They do, but in the tribal areas, they have a semi-autonomous kind of existence whereby the government's law and authority does not apply. And these tribes basically are the same people that reside on both sides of the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. And that border, in fact, was drawn up quite arbitrarily back in 1893 by a British civil servant who was out doing a survey, and he decided that we want to draw a line over here because the people on this side of what came to be called the Durand Line, it was the British civil servant by the name of William Durand, that people living on the eastern side of that line were to be part of the British Empire, and people living on the other side that the British could not control, they were left free on the Afghan side. Now, Afghanistan has not accepted the legitimacy of that border. It's a different issue. We can go into it perhaps at some stage, but the point that I'm trying to make is that these tribes that are that live on both sides of the border cross this border quite openly. It's unmanned. It cannot be demarcated clearly. There are mountains and there are valleys and so on. And not only do they cross openly, but that the fact that the war in Afghanistan, where the Americans have been killing so many civilians, that the people from the Afghan side of the border have also been coming over to the Pakistan side of the border. I mean, I can tell you, I was born in that area. I know that area very well. And each winter, for instance, literally tens of thousands of Afghans would come over into our side of the country. They would set up tents. They would come up with their sheep and goats and donkeys and so on. And because of the fact that winter was very harsh in Afghanistan, they would spend their winter months on this side of the border, and then come spring, they would go back. Now, this has been happening for thousands of years because these people have lived there for more than 5,000 years. Their history goes back that far. And all of a sudden, you have these artificial barriers and artificial divisions that are being created. And in addition to that, a war is being imposed on the people. So in addition to all the killings that are going on in Afghanistan, these have now spilled over into Pakistan. And there is a deliberate policy. In fact, there is very strong feeling within Pakistan that the Americans... part of the American plan was to spread this war into Pakistan because they have, and part of their policy of attacking Afghanistan was to destabilize Pakistan and to take control of Pakistan's nuclear weapons. That is basically a feeling that is shared by a very large number of highly influential people within Pakistan, including many commentators, retired generals, including serving generals and so on. They see this as part of the larger American plan for that region.
Certainly, the way that this is being discussed in the American media now reflects in some way what you've been saying. The United States now refers to the conflict as the AF-PAC conflict.
So exactly.
Afghanistan, Pakistan together are one, one battlefield, but that has significant ramifications. It means a definite extension of the war. I guess it's sort of legitimizing what's already happened.
Yes.
It seems to me you do get this instability wherever the United States goes. So you had Iraq, which was a stable country, and then the United States are there, and look at it now. It's highly unstable.
Exactly.
Then you have Afghanistan, which had problems with instability. It had the Taliban, it had Al-Qaeda. Now, they weren't exactly the same thing. And now that the United States is in there, it seems that there's a whole lot more people under arms now engaged in conflict. Now we've got Pakistan as well. So it seems that it's causing instability, but I still don't fully understand how the United States would benefit from a scenario of increased instability in Pakistan.
Well, the overall picture, in fact, this has been mentioned in, as far back as the summer of 2006 in the U.S. Army Journal. There was an article written in that by a retired U.S. colonel, by the name of Colonel Peters, who had in fact suggested that Pakistan would need to be rearranged geographically. There's a much broader scenario that is being worked on, and that is that in this geographical rearrangement, what is referred to as the frontier province of Pakistan would be broken away from Pakistan, and that would link up with Afghanistan to perhaps create what is referred to as a larger Pashtunistan, which means, to give a homeland to the Pashtun people. For the benefit of your viewers, I happen to be a Pashtun. I don't believe in that philosophy. I think that would bring more misery to the Pashtun people. But yet, leaving that aside, the fact is that this is one part of the equation that the Americans are working on. And so you can see that in Afghanistan, it is the Pashtun belt that has been destabilized, where much of the fighting is going on. And that fighting and war has now been brought over into Pakistan, where the Pakistani military has been forced at gunpoint under threat that if they don't go and attack their people, that the Americans will start doing it directly and bring in their own forces over there. So that's one part of the scenario. The other is the province of Balochistan, which is further south. In fact, it is the adjoining province south of the frontier province of Pakistan. Now, Balochistan is significant for a variety of reasons. Number one, Balochistan shares its borders with Afghanistan as well as with Iran. Both are critical, because this plays into the American campaign against Iran as well to destabilize Iran. Secondly, Balochistan has just had a new seaport that is called Gwadar Port. Now, Gwadar is an extremely important place, and this is going to become more and more prominent, and it will come into the picture as time goes by, because it's a deep sea water port, and massive ships can come and berth right at the coast. Now, this port was built with Chinese help. The Pakistanis did not give the contract to the Americans, because when the project was launched at that time, Pakistan-U.S. relations were not very good, and so the contract went to the Chinese. Now, the Chinese are very keen to utilize Gwadar Port for a variety of reasons. Number one, that, of course, there is a highway that links northern Pakistan with China, so a lot of Chinese goods come down that road, although it goes through very high mountain ranges. But the Chinese are keen to have access to the port of Gwadar so that they can export their goods into the Middle East and other regions through this port. Another significance for the port of Gwadar is that it is only 50 miles from the mouth of the Persian Gulf. So any navy that controls the port of Gwadar would actually control all traffic, sea traffic, from the Persian Gulf. And as you know, at least 60 to 70% of the world's oil needs at the present time pass through the Persian Gulf. So any navy, whether it's Chinese or American, that controls the port at Gwadar would be able to control the flow of oil from the Persian Gulf. Thirdly, Gwadar is seen as a gateway to Central Asia. So again, Central Asia is the new frontier where a lot of riches are located, especially oil and gas. And that's a region that the Chinese have worked very hard to cultivate and sign contracts with so that they could get oil and gas for their developing economy. And that is something that the Americans do not wish to see. So the Americans are anxious to destabilize Pakistan by breaking away Balochistan as well. There is what is referred to as the Balochistan Liberation Army. It is well known, and I can confirm it to you because of my own conversations with strategic planners in Pakistan, with retired generals in Pakistan. In fact, the former chief of Pakistan's army has publicly stated that American, British, and Indian intelligence agents are operating in Balochistan. They are financing the Balochistan Liberation Army to destabilize Pakistan so that they could break Balochistan away from Pakistan. So the ramifications of that, of course, would be that it's not only the Pakistani side of Balochistan, but also the Iranian side of Balochistan. And so the Americans would be able to kill two birds with one stone, that they would destabilize Pakistan, break away Balochistan from Pakistani side as well as from the Iranian side. And so you can see the mess that would be created there. But it seems the Americans are absolutely prepared to do that because their aim is to lay their hands on the resources as well as this very strategically important seaport and to surround China as well in the process.
Well, I can see why Iran and China would be upset. It's my understanding as well that China has many investments in Pakistan, you know, more than 100 corporate type investments. So
yes.
If Pakistan is destabilized, that destabilizes China's own investments as well.
Exactly, yes. And in fact, since 2005, a number of Chinese engineers that have been working in Balochistan, on many occasions they have been kidnapped, and on some occasions they have been murdered. On other occasions, the Pakistani government has had to pay huge ransom to secure their release because they do not want to undermine their relations with the Chinese or to upset the Chinese, because Pakistan is, to a very considerable extent, dependent on China. As you said, there are a number of projects that the Chinese are working on in Pakistan, and it is not in Pakistan's interest to antagonize them or upset them in any way.
So as usual, there's a lot more to the story than we're hearing about.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course.
I mean, when you listen to the news reports, there's quite a lot of alarmism now, because it's said that the Taliban or Al-Qaeda is present in force, you know, acting openly in Pakistan, and that they could seize the nuclear weapons of Pakistan, and it's just the nightmare scenario. So how do we interpret these latest statements by, you know, generals, United States generals?
You see, this scenario has, of course, been played up for quite a while, and they keep on talking about Pakistani nuclear weapons under threat of the Taliban and so on. This is mere scaremongering, because the Americans have been trying for a very long time to force the Pakistanis to put their nuclear weapons under American control. And this is something that the military has resisted so far. I believe the military thinks that is one card that they cannot let go of, because then they would lose all control and all negotiating power with the Americans. But the Americans keep pushing. Now, you see, they talk about, these Taliban being 60 miles or 100 kilometers away from Islamabad, and from getting hold of nuclear weapons. What they don't say is that the Americans are in Islamabad. They are trying to get hold of those nuclear weapons. And nuclear weapons are not sort of, toys that, people, Taliban and so on, these country pumpkins can come and grab, and then they can start using them. there are very effective control mechanisms put in place by very sophisticated Pakistani military officers who know exactly what they are doing. And according to my information, these nuclear weapons are not stored in one place. Like, you know, normally you would not have all of the critical components in one place, nor do you put the critical mass of nuclear material, because that is, you know, very, you know, fissionable material, and you wouldn't want to do that unless you actually want to create a weapon at that time. So the various components of these nuclear weapons are placed in different places. There are very stringent command and control structures put in place, and I can tell you that the Pakistan military is extremely efficient and well organized in this respect, and that they're not going to allow you know, country pumpkins to come and take control of these. So this, all of this hysteria and paranoia that is being created in the U.S. is deliberate in order to scaremonger and to create a sense of fear that somehow these weapons are about to fall into the hands of these crazy people and they're going to blow up the world. In fact, I would say the world faces much greater threat from America's so-called sophisticated and civilized rulers and generals than they do from these crazy people called the so-called Taliban in Pakistan.
We're seeing some of that sophistication right now in Afghanistan. I mean, there was, I'm told now, like about 120 or more civilians were killed recently. We got conflicting stories over that, didn't we? So,
yeah, in fact, the total that the Afghan government has given and the International Committee of the Red Cross has confirmed, in fact, Jessica Barry of the International Committee of the Red Cross said that their estimate was anything from 130 to 147 civilians killed in Farah province. And they've also confirmed, and the American military has now admitted, that the bombing took place after the fighting had ended. And so there was absolutely no need to go and bomb that place once the fighting had ended. And yet, you know, 140, nearly 150 civilians have been butchered in the Farah province. And this is not not the only incident. I mean, you know, last August, for instance, a very an area very close to this place, another, you know, 120 or so people were killed in that incident as well. The Americans initially denied that anything like that had occurred, and then a couple of days later, when a video that a doctor, local doctor, had captured on his cell phone, when that came out, only then the Americans admitted. So, of course, these Americans go around killing people, but obviously, as far as American generals and politicians are concerned, other people's lives do not have much value, especially Afghan lives, so they don't care much about them.
Well, this has been happening for a while now. I mean, do we know what the ramifications are? I mean, if you have hundreds of people being hit by predator strikes in Pakistan, you've got people being bombed 30, 40, 100 at a time in Afghanistan. I mean, this must have some kind of impact.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in Afghanistan, for instance, 2 days ago, there was a massive rally in Kabul itself. Now, Kabul is supposed to be hundreds of miles away from Farah province. Farah province is way out in the west of Afghanistan. And yet these students in Kabul came out by the thousands and they protested against these American attacks. Even the villagers in that area where the attack occurred, the village is called Granai and Bala Baluk. These are two small villages over there where most of the casualties occurred. Thousands of people came out to protest there as well. It is obvious that anger against the Americans is increasing. Now, I want to point out that the area where the recent attack occurred in Farah province, that's not a Pashtun belt. That is an area where the Dari-speaking people reside, and they are different from the Pashtuns. And yet, the Americans are antagonizing those people as well who are not necessarily friends with the Taliban in Afghanistan. But you see that even in those areas, people are being attacked, and now people are turning against the Americans in a very big way. the same effect in the entire frontier province of Pakistan and in the rest of Pakistan is occurring because of American attacks against civilians, and the people of Pakistan are extremely unhappy with this. I can say this with great certainty, that if a survey were conducted in Pakistan about not only American attacks but about American military presence or Western military presence in Afghanistan, that the overwhelming majority of the people in Pakistan would say that these military forces should get out because they are the biggest source of instability in this entire region. That they are the ones that are causing this mayhem. They are the ones that are creating all of these problems for us. And we need to be left alone. We can sort our own problems out ourselves.
Well, it's unfortunate. It looks like we've got to go now. I'd love to discuss what you think of Obama's actions so far on this issue are. We'll have to follow up at some point. Certainly, people are expecting things from the new president, but you know, you don't always know what you're getting. But, well, Zafar, I'd like to thank you for being on the program, because I don't know where else our listeners could get this kind of detail. So thank you very much, and we'll try to follow up on this and talk in the future about the political issues in Washington and you know, what people have expected and what's actually been delivered. So,
sure, it'd be a pleasure.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Zafar.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that was Zafar Benghash. He's a noted Islamic scholar, a frequent guest of our program. He's been a journalist and covering many issues.